On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
I'm going to give you the results of the poll on whether ministers should have placed themselves higher in the queue for COVID-19 vaccines first. But there is one point, actually, that a colleague has just got in touch, which is worth stressing. If you think that you may have COVID-19 symptoms this weekend, there is no charge for you to call a GP and to get referred onwards for a test. This is something which has emerged as a little bit of a surprise on Twitter in the last couple of days, that people don't realise that you don't have to pay a GP's fee upfront, or you don't have to pay any other upfront charge. Simply call a GP. If you don't have a GP, call any other GP that's available. They will triage you over the phone. If they think you need to be referred for a test, they will pass you on. There is no cost for the GP's consultation, and there's no cost for the test either. And it is a point that's worth making, just in light of what Neffet has been saying in the last couple of days. On the poll about whether ministers should have placed themselves higher in the queue, it's striking that those who voted in the poll, which I've done on Twitter, which closed only a moment ago, and thank you to the nearly 1,000 of you who voted in the few minutes that it was open, 60.6% of you don't believe that ministers should have put themselves higher in the queue. 39.4% said yes, they should be higher. And yet, those who have texted us to 53106 are almost universally in favour of early vaccination. Pat, for example, says, I'm actually gobsmacked to have just learned that the Cabinet is not vaccinated already. Like them or dislike them, they have to make the decisions to run the country. Tom and Tip says, that's the most sense I've ever heard about Micheál Martin's trip to New York and vaccines for politicians. Declan Kilkenny says, Gerard Howland was 100% correct. Our Cabinet are the most essential workers in the country. There is no frontline if the government doesn't govern. They should have been the first to get vaccinated. And Joan says, at last it's being stated. Of course our government representatives and Neffet reps should have been vaccinated immediately. We need them to be available and ready to work every day on our behalf, says Joan. One texter, Mary, for example, says no, they should definitely not be first in line for the vaccine. A few comments on Twitter saying that although it shouldn't just be ministers, it should be all Oireachta staff. Others pointing out that, well, the dole is only about a quarter full at the moment, so what's to say that they would still end up keeping themselves away from work even if they were vaccinated? Do let me know what you think. But interesting that the poll says about 61% of you don't think ministers should have been higher in the queue for COVID-19 vaccines. Now, let's move on. We heard a little bit earlier on in the programme from Professor Sarah Gilbert. She's the architect behind the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. She was speaking to Andrew Marr on the BBC. I want to play you another clip of what she had to say, because a lot of the interview revolved around the South African variant, particularly the story that you heard Stephen talking about on the news a couple of moments ago, which is concerning causing a lot of concern, I should say, in the UK. Now, we've already heard what she had to say about the EU and the Irish approach to holding back on using the vaccines for over 70s. But she was also asked about a study due to be published tomorrow and reported already in the Financial Times, which suggests that the current AstraZeneca vaccine only offers limited protection against the South African variant when it comes to preventing moderate and mild disease. Here's a little bit of what she had to say.
What we're seeing from other vaccine developers is that they have a reduction in efficacy against some of the variant viruses. And what that is looking like is that we may not be reducing the total number of cases, but there's still protection in that case against deaths, hospitalizations, and severe disease. Maybe we won't be reducing the number of cases as much, but we still won't be seeing the deaths, the hospitalizations, and the severe disease. And that's really important for healthcare systems, even if we're having mild and asymptomatic infections, to prevent people from going into hospital with COVID would have a major effect.
Now, President Macron famously said that your vaccine was only quasi-effective in the over 65s, and a lot of people piled in and criticised him for that. But since then, Germany, France, Switzerland and Poland have all decided not to give your vaccine to over 65s. What do you think is going on there?
Well, they're saying that they would like to see more data in the over 65s, and that will be possible to provide once the US trial reaches its efficacy readout. But it's not data that we have currently from the UK trial. We did have older adults enrolled in the UK trial, and we had safety and immunogenicity data, but a very limited amount of efficacy data because they were enrolled somewhat later in the study. And also they were obeying guidelines and being very cautious, and they weren't going out and getting infected with coronavirus. So that means that we don't have data on how well the vaccine works. If the people in the control group aren't getting infected, we can't tell if the people in the vaccinated group would have been protected. So what's happening is, in Europe, they do have other vaccines that are available. And so they're able to decide, if they want to use different vaccines in different age groups. However, we will have data in future showing how well the vaccine works in older people.
That's Professor Sarah Gilbert, who is, again, the architect of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, speaking to Andrew Marr earlier on. She did also say, by the way, that in similar way to how flu vaccines are somewhat re-engineered every year to take account of new variants, she said that researchers are already working on a new vaccine which is designed to more effectively combat this new emerging South African variant. She says that they expect that new version of the vaccine to generate the antibodies that would recognise the new variant, and it looks very much like it will be available for the autumn. They're already working on the first part of the manufacturing process in Oxford. Let's talk a little bit more about the whole trend of global variants. We're joined on the line by Killian de Goscoon, who is the head of the National Virus Reference Laboratory, which is chiefly responsible for trying to govern and trying to identify these new variants in Ireland. Killian, welcome back to the show. Thanks very much as ever for giving some of your time this Sunday. First of all, you might just give us an overview of the variants that we have seen in Ireland so far and exactly how much of the cases they make up.
Yeah, good morning, Gavin. Thanks for having me back on the show. So at this stage, people will be familiar with the three main variants of concern that have been identified. The first one was reported in the UK, the second one was reported in South Africa, and the third one was first reported in travellers from Brazil who had arrived in Japan. So we know that the variant that was first reported in the UK, lineage B117 as it's referred to, accounts now for around about 75% of our cases here. So it really is our dominant strain. So I think we have to be aware of the fact that the virus we're dealing with now is more transmissible based on evidence from the UK and other countries than the virus we would have seen, say, 6 months ago. We only have a handful of cases of the South African variant at this stage. These were identified through the targeted testing program that the HSE would have implemented over the last number of weeks. We haven't identified any of the variant that has been reported from Brazil. So that's good news. So we're concerned, I suppose, about them all because they all appear to be more transmissible. They all share a common amino acid change that improves their ability to bind to our cells and to cause an infection. And they also appear to be able to generate, they're fitter in the context of replicating, and they seem to lead to a higher amount of virus being produced by an infected individual, which also would contribute to transmissibility. Okay. The concerns we have about the variants reported in South Africa and in Brazil is that in addition to being more transmissible, they also have additional amino acid changes at regions of the spike protein where we know neutralizing antibodies typically bind. So I suppose to put it in simple terms, the concern is that a lot of the vaccines that we are now seeing rolling out, which is fantastic, they would have been developed very early on in the course of the pandemic, probably around, say, March, April of last year, and they're using the spike protein that was circulating at that stage.
Okay.
That spike protein has now changed. That's not a huge surprise to us, but obviously it is a concern, and it's something that we'll have to monitor over the coming years with this virus. People will be familiar with the fact that the influenza vaccine changes every year. Now, we know the coronaviruses don't mutate quite as often as influenza viruses, but they still are capable of changing and evolving. So while we may not need to necessarily to go to an annual vaccination campaign for SARS coronavirus type 2, it's possible that there will need to be booster doses over the coming years as the virus evolves.
Okay. When it comes to trying to find new variants, is it basically a kind of a random sample, particularly when it comes to the B117, the Kent variant? You mentioned it's now 3/4 of all cases. You know, can we be fairly confident that that is 3/4 of all Irish cases? Are we kind of doing a broad trawl, or how exactly do we go about identifying which cases you want to run through the sequencer?
Yeah, so there's a number of different ways, I guess, looking for new variants. Certainly you can do targeted testing as we would have done in the early stages for people travelling from the UK, as we've done that for the South African and Brazilian variants as well. We also want to take, I suppose, as you said, just a sort of a sample, a number of specimens at random from the population to see whether the new variant is present in those. And that's what we've been doing over the last number of weeks. So again, people may or may not be familiar with one of the diagnostic assays that they were using in the Pillar Labs in the United Kingdom, where the test itself looks for three different targets, three different parts of the SARS coronavirus type 2 genome. And in the new variant, or the variant that was reported in the UK, one of those targets yields a not detected result. So it's called the S gene target failure, or it's been referred to as S dropout. So that test is actually available now in Ireland. It didn't form part of our initial diagnostic capacity, but with work with ourselves at the NVRL and with the HSE and support from the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine out at Back Weston, that test is on Ireland now and has been used for community testing. So we can monitor the proportion of the lineage B117 with that Thermo Fisher assay based on the S dropout. You can also do more targeted testing of people who have returned from other countries. Then the second issue, I think we obviously rely on support from our clinical colleagues and our public health colleagues to say maybe look at a particular outbreak of concern that might have an apparent increase in disease severity, or perhaps sort of increased transmission, or just an unusual cluster. So that's another way of looking for potential novel variants. The other things I suppose we'll be looking at now as the vaccine rolls out, the vaccination program rolls out, is that we'll be looking at cases in people who have been vaccinated to see if they're spike protein or if the S gene in their viruses is different to what we would expect to see.
Well, I did want to ask you about people who have been vaccinated, because as we know that the two countries that have kind of run streets ahead of most of us in the rest of the Western world are the UK and Israel. And there seems to be some competing data coming from those two countries about whether the virus can fully stop fully curb the worst effects of the virus. So say, for example, in Israel, 57% of the over 60s now have been vaccinated, and there's been a 46% drop in cases. Hospital admissions are down quite a bit, and it certainly looks as if the vaccine is doing pretty much exactly as you would hope that it would. And then in England, we see that case rates aren't falling any faster in the over 80s than they would be in younger age groups. So in Israel, it appears that mass vaccination for older people is stopping cases, and it doesn't seem to be the case in England. And I wonder, might that be because of new variants, or what can you draw from that?
So I haven't seen, I suppose, the raw data in detail, but you're right. I've heard those reports. I think it's difficult in the context, I suppose, of different countries having different epidemics and different populations. So I think what you'll have to look at is what the other public health measures that are in place in the countries at the time that you're vaccinating, because realistically, if you've got significant levels of restrictions and people are, you know, staying at home, people aren't traveling out there, it might take longer to see the effect of vaccination when you introduce it. So you'll see cases fall. And I think what they have been reporting in both jurisdictions is that we're seeing an impact on hospitalizations and on severe disease, which is really important. But we do know that the vaccines, we don't have great evidence yet at this point in time that they have an impact on, say, milder cases, or that they impact on transmission. So I think while we're looking at all of these data sort of emerging in real time, and that's really important, I think it's likely that the vaccine will have the same effect in the same populations over a slightly longer period of time when we've had an opportunity to collate all of the data. The effect might not be identical in different jurisdictions. Yeah. But as I said, vaccination is really just it's an additional layer in our approach to protecting ourselves from this virus. So if you've got severe restrictions in place, then the impact of the vaccine might take longer to become apparent, sure, purely because people are staying at home and aren't interacting as much.
Sure. Final question, and again, I'm reluctant that this could possibly end up in the conversation ending on something of a downer, but given that there seems to be maybe some variety or some lack of concrete confidence that the vaccines will do what we hope they will do and stop everyone from getting sick or at least needing to be hospitalised, does that mean that even after mass vaccination, that we're still looking at there having to be some sort of restrictions on how we go about seeing each other and the need to maintain social distancing? Because even if they're not to hospital grade, they'll still have a lot of people who might still find themselves getting sick as a result of this virus.
Yeah, so we're getting some information, and again, it's early data, but we're getting some information that the vaccine will have an impact on the amount of a virus that people are producing, so the viral load. We're getting information that it will have an impact on the duration of positivity, so the amount of time that people are shedding virus. So it's likely that the vaccines, as we increase the proportion of the population that's vaccinated, will have an impact on transmission and will have a significant additional benefit. Whether we get to, I suppose, a level of community protection on account of the the new variants or the emerging variants, we'll have to wait to see. I suppose the only thing to say on a positive note,
please do end on a positive note, just to make sure we do sign off on something upbeat.
I suppose from our perspective here, the only way that, say, for example, the variant that was first reported in South Africa, for that to have an impact on the success of our vaccination program here, it needs to become the dominant strain globally. So the key measure first in all of this is to try and prevent spread of that variant globally. And that it comes back to sort of travel restrictions across the world, not just here in Ireland. And we saw, for example, the Danish mink variant a number of months ago. Denmark managed to contain that, and that variant is no longer in circulation. So really, it comes back to sort of the basic public health measures about controlling the spread of this virus first. Vaccination will be an additional tool, but we can't rely on it necessarily to be a silver bullet. Mm. And certainly, as I said, the only way it would have an impact globally as if it becomes the dominant strain. Now, we know that new variants will continue to emerge because that's what happened with viruses. But as Professor Gilbert has said, the vaccines can be updated, they can be changed. And I think that's a really good news story. And the fact that we have three vaccines already available for use in Ireland in the space of 12 months is a phenomenal success. But I think what we want, like from in Ireland at this stage, our case numbers are still far too high. We really need people to continue to implement the public health measures that have been successful in getting us down from between 7,000 and 8,000 cases a day to now 1,000 cases a day. But we have to get down further. And what I would say is that we'll see the benefit of the vaccine over the coming months. If we can get down to very low case numbers, we'll get a significant benefit from the vaccine, because what we'll see is that as we can move to ease restrictions and as we can move to open up elements of society, because of the impact of vaccination, we should get, I suppose, more bang for our buck. But okay, I think we don't need to be monitoring, I suppose, the vaccine uptake rate so closely. It's an additional tool, but the primary measure at this stage is really just to get case numbers down as low as we can.
Cillian de Goscoigne, Director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory and Chair of the Expert Advisory Group to NEFA, thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime on The Record.
This summer, saddle up with the only sportsbook where you can bet on horse racing, FanDuel. Right now, new customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $500. That's right, you'll get up to $500 back in racing credit if your first horse racing bet doesn't win. With FanDuel Sportsbook, you can even watch and bet select races live right in the app. So, bet horse racing on the same app where you bet all your other favorite sports. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Just download the app or go to FanDuel.com/horses to score your no-sweat bet up to $500. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Offer valid on first real money wager of $5 or more. Verified FD racing account required. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable racing site credit that expires 7 days after issuance. Max refund $500. Restrictions apply. See terms at racing.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.